This episode of the Rock Solid Podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp Therapy Online.
Hello, I'm Lawrence Gallen from Styx, and you are listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
I can't afford to be. This is small town music. This is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away. A song away. A song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room today is the man who has been holding down the vocals and the keyboards for over 20 years in the band Styx. Please welcome Lawrence Gallen. Good morning.
Hello there, Pat Francis. How are you, sir?
I am good. Let me ask you something. In 1993, you have a solo album called But You Can Call Me Larry.
Yes.
What do I call you? Do people call you Larry?
Call me only when I'm playing hockey with them, actually. That's basically where that came from. No, not really. When I joined Styx, someone did call me Larry, some Canadian person, and Tommy Shaw's wife immediately went, Larry? Who the hell's Larry? He's a Lawrence.
Yeah. You know what? I agree. I think you are a Lawrence. It's more regal, if so to speak.
It's funny, when we did that album that you're referring to, that's back in the days before I joined Styx. In the 1980s, I was just a one name act in Canada, just Gowan.
Just Gowan.
And I'm still known as that. When I go and play my solo shows, it just says Gowan. But in the 90s, we needed to distance ourselves from that 80s goop that was on us, because the one named act had suddenly gone out of favor by the 1990s. So I decided to use my full name. And my manager at the time said, yeah, but, you know, when we're playing hockey, can we still call you Larry?
Well, yeah, when they're checking you against the board, they want
screw you, Larry.
Right, exactly.
Larry comes back with an elbow. that's basically where it came from. And we decided to kind of make a kind of tongue-in-cheek album title called Lawrence Gallen, But You Can Call Me Larry, which the DJs in Canada had a lot of fun with, just like you are right now, Pat Francis.
I ask it because I wasn't sure. I thought, well, maybe he goes by the more informal.
Yeah.
I wanted to use the correct thing. And I don't want to just call you Gallen. That seems dismissive. So
that's totally fine. Whichever one you feel most comfortable with, Pat Francis. But Lawrence is what they call me in the band, and that's probably where you want to go with.
Then that's what we're gonna do.
Okay.
And thanks to Ricky.
Great talking to you.
See you late. Good night. See you. And thanks to Ricky Phillips, you're no longer the new guy.
You know, in fact, thanks to Willie Vankovich, I'm no longer the new guy.
I forgot about him. The
newest of new guys. The freshest and the youngest, with the fewest rings around the trunk, if you happen to cut them open. I'm in my just finishing. I'm in my 23rd year. I very sadly have to relinquish the new guy moniker. People did still call me that for a number of years, even after Ricky had joined. And I love when the word new is attached to my name in any way whatsoever. I'm always very pleased with that. But
I got to tell you,
I'm the old new guy now.
Well, you might not be the new guy, but I'm looking at you right now, and I've seen Styx many, many, many times with Lawrence Gallen, and you still look like the young guy. So bravo.
Well, okay. Obviously the hair hasn't thrown you off. That's good. Yeah. I actually dyed it gray just so I'd look like those hip young ladies.
Let me tell you about my relationship with the band Styx. I had only seen them once, and it was on the reunion tour in 96 or 98, whenever that was.
That's funny. That was 96 and 97. And that was the only time that I'd ever seen them live. It was in 97 when I did a couple of shows with them in Montreal and Quebec City. And I'd never seen the band live until that time as well. So we have that in common, Pat.
And they were fantastic. So then a few years later, they're back and they got a new keyboard player. And I was like, sadly, I did not know about Lawrence Gowan. I did not know about Gowan. I did not know
about Larry.
Music. Yeah, Larry, your music from Canada had never got into my DNA.
Right.
So my friend and I go, we're big Styx fans. We're excited. And we were hooked on Lawrence Gowan immediately.
Wow.
You hit it out of the park. I remember when we left, we were like, that guy is fantastic. And I mean, I don't know if that's always how you've been as a performer, you know, so enigmatic and so full of life on stage, or if you really had to amp it up on that first Styx tour to win the old fans over. I don't know what it was, but yeah, you were fantastic and you just nailed it. And we've been fans ever since.
Thank you very much for saying that, Pat. I'm glad you feel that way. What year was that? Do you remember? Was it 99, 2000, 2001, something like that?
I can tell you what, you guys were touring with the Styx World Live 2001 album. Now look at this.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you can see that, but I met you after the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it says, to Pat, number one Styx World, Lawrence Gowan. And we were so thrilled to say hello to you guys. It was super cool.
That's excellent. Well, thank you for all of everything that you just said right there. That was great. I think the greatest compliment that I take to heart is when someone says, I saw the band and they name a year, whether it's 1996 or 97, or if they say it's 1978, or if it was 1981, or, you know, I love when they say, you know, I saw the band then and I loved it and it's just as good now and I love it just as much. That it, to me, is the ultimate, because I, quite honestly, here's why. That's how I feel when I see the Rolling Stones. I you know, I saw them with Mick Taylor. I never did see them with Brian Jones other than on, you know, TV, but I saw them with Mick Taylor. And when I saw them with Ron Wood, it was every bit as good.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh no, I can't believe this, because Mick Taylor was such an integral part of that band in that era. Of Sticky Fingers and Exile on Main Street and Let It Bleed. But I think that there's something about the spirit of a band that has to survive a monumental member change.
Yeah.
And that spirit has to be somehow carried forward with whatever the lineup is. And these are realities of life. You know, it's actually quite remarkable that Styx have only had 10 members since the beginning of its 50-year history,
right?
Your professional history, the recording history. And that's something that I think the guys in the band have been very astute about over the years as to who joins and why. You know, when Tommy Shaw joined the band in December, I believe it was, of 1975, they just had their first real success. And funny enough, it was in Canada. It was in Quebec with a song called Sweet Madame Blue. And they very deftly, you know, brought Tommy Shaw into the band then. And instead of it being like, oh, man, just when you're getting successful, it's, you know, you've changed it. It actually turned out to be a great thing. And it extended the life of the band. And I think to a man, you know, the band has always had very, you know, intelligent and forward thinking people who kind of brought the right person onto the scene at the right juncture. And so when people, you know, say something like that to myself, I just feel, I take it as a great compliment. So thank you.
You are welcome. And as far as forward thinking people, yeah, I mean, Styx lyrics have always been more than your average band.
Yeah.
It's not about partying and girls, which is great. It's been more.
Oh, yeah. I have nothing against that.
Yeah, you know, nothing against that. Yeah. My wife might have something against it, but you know. But yeah, just it's been more so that after all these years, those lyrics still hold up or still have different meanings.
Yeah, that very good point. One of the things that I really liked when I joined the band was, you know, the songs that I felt I would be able to sing the best were the ones that I could connect to, you know, in some way and personalize and see myself in the narrative, as they say. You know, I think that's part of what has contributed to the longevity of the band, is that they're very relatable lyrics. You can see yourself in the human experience quite quickly in a song like Grand Illusion, especially now, you know, and I see myself in Mr. Roboto, and I see myself in, you know, these are songs obviously that I was not part of the writing of, but I can, you know, and the great thing is, you know, with Tommy J. Y. Chuck, when I joined the band, they never once asked me in any, even the most remote fashion, to try to mimic or do a sound-alike thing to the records, but instead to kind of give the most honest rendition I can of those songs. And within the band framework, they felt that it worked, you know, particularly when our harmonies hit their stride. And so that's basically what I've tried to do over all the years, even up until last night, and I'll do it again tonight, is try to put the song on the day where it's relevant to what my life experience is to this very point, to where we're playing these notes and singing these lyrics, and the audience seem to jump in and see themselves in the songs as well. So that's a great testament to their longevity.
And then thankfully, after all these years, we do have songs that Lawrence Gowan has written with Styx and sings in Styx. So you do have your repertoire of originals now that you can go to. Last year, Crash of the Crown is released.
Yeah.
Where does that title come from?
Well, okay. Crash of the Crown was a song that myself, Tommy Shaw, and Will Ivankovich wrote together over the course of a week in Nashville. And we had several ideas, and they all kind of, in some ways, metaphorically, they kind of crashed together. If you ever listen to the song, it's about 4 minutes long. We've been playing in every single show since the record was released. And by the way, it's the first time that a Styx album went to number one on the rock album chart of Billboard within like a week of it being released. So that was a great distinction, and it told us we must have been doing something on the right path. So, Crash of the Crown, to me, the album is very much about renewal and renewal after a cataclysmic event. So we are seeing great institutions right now, and great, you know. But even down to a personal level, we'll go back to that, where people see things that they may have put a great stock and faith in over the years, over the course of their lives, have been shaken from the foundation, so to speak. And yet the resilience of humanity is to move forward. We had the song, but it became the album title when we listened to it again in the first few months of the thing that happened in 2020. We listened to the songs and realized, wow, these really are relatable to what we're going through, because we'd written, all but two of them were written prior to the pandemic. And Crash of the Crown began to come to the surface on a number of levels. It was like, yeah, this is this is kind of the cataclysmic moment that everyone's kind of facing at the at this time, and they have to find a way to navigate their way through it. Funny enough, the it's odd that the crown and corona in Spanish means crown, and that was the name of the virus. And so there are so many ways that you can interpret that title. I also like the fact that you can kind of figure out for yourself, what does that mean to me, right, today? So that's the crash of the crown, and why it just kept surfacing as the title of the album. And we kept putting out, checking with all the people that work with the band and through management and agents and everything. We'd list a few titles, but everyone kept coming back saying, Crash of the Crown, that should be the title. It just sounds right. So that's how it made it in.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Pat Francis from the Rock Solid Podcast here. And let me just tell you, life doesn't come with a user manual. You know, you get in and out of relationships, or you move to a new city, or you're starting a new job. Sometimes just talking with family and friends doesn't do the trick. So here's what I recommend. Maybe try BetterHelp. BetterHelp therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and learn productive coping skills. BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people with licensed therapists. It's convenient, secure, and accessible anywhere, 100% online. You know, you're on vacation, you're on a business trip, and you need to talk to someone. Well, that's where BetterHelp comes in. In a perfect world, everyone would be able to talk openly and honestly with their friends and family about some of the problems they may be experiencing. But we know that isn't always the case, so BetterHelp is a great option. With BetterHelp, you can learn coping skills, self-empowerment, and how to deal with trauma. Again, everyone deserves to feel their best, and BetterHelp makes it easier to get started. As the world's largest therapy service, they've helped put millions of people together with professionally licensed and vetted therapists, available 100% online. All the benefits of in-person therapy, plus it's more convenient, more accessible, and more affordable. All you got to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. And get this, no waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. If you're stuck, then it's time to get unstuck with BetterHelp. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/rocksolid. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/rocksolid.
Now back to the show.
So it's not really a concept album, but it's a theme album. There's some themes in there that
intertwine. That's a very good way to put it, Pat. It's thematic in that, as I said prior, there were some sort of cataclysmic event, unnamed, is overcome in some way, and so that spirit of renewal, I think, runs through every single song, right from Fight of Our Lives to even to Lost at Sea, which is, by the way, so there's a nice little piece of music I get to do that I came up with for the band called Lost at Sea.
38 seconds long. It's like an interlude.
Fourth shortest song in the history of rock. Third is Her Majesty by the Beatles. I forget what number two is. Definitely number one is Napalm Death's You Suffer, which is 1 second long. Incredible piece of music, by the way. I have it sampled. I sometimes hit it on my keyboard when we're doing the sound check, just to go nice. Napalm Death. Barrel. Thank you. Anyway.
Lost at Sea.
Lost at Sea is a piece where I bring Chuck on stage, Chuck Panazzo, and the two of us do that as a little duet. I'm doing that because, you see, I always have the piano. You know, anyway, we do that as a duet, and that segues into this song. Okay.
I've heard that one.
So that's the familiar riff at the top of Come Sail Away. So we have a little thematic moment there that connects a piece of music from Crash of the Crown with Come Sail Away. And the audience seemed to really munch that up with great appetite.
Yeah, I mean, that's terrific.
I had a dream about the ocean. I was somewhere lost at sea. When I heard somebody calling, come to me. I assumed it must be Neptune, luring me into the deep. When I woke to hear my own voice calling from my sleep, from my sleep.
Let me ask you this. I think the last time I saw you guys was pre-pandemic at the Saban Theater in Beverly Hills.
Okay.
Are you still jumping off the keyboard? Still climbing up there and jumping off?
So, still climbing up there, yes. Still doing a bit of jumping, yes. Not jumping off the height of the keyboard because two knee operations later, and I think I'm starting to almost learn my lesson. After my first knee operation on my left knee, my doctor came out and saw the band about 6 months later when my knee had healed, and I was still jumping off the piano. He said all I could think of through the show is, I wonder when he's going to need that right knee done. He said he was right. He said within the next year, and he was correct. And then I had the right knee done, and then I realized, okay, there's a certain height. I have to acknowledge that there's a certain height I can't jump from anymore. There's a great little clip of video when we did this when we did the Super Bowl. We've done two Super Bowls. We did it the first time. From the stage, I could actually get to the field, and I noticed the field was the AstroTurf, but it was springy.
Yeah, you know?
It had a bit of it. So I thought, well, in front of 75,000 people, I'm just going to go for it. And I went off that thing, and there's a great picture of that. It looks like I'm like parachuting in without a parachute. But when I landed, I collapsed, but I didn't blow my knee out at all because the ground was soft.
The cushion, yeah.
So if you ever happen to be playing the Super Bowl, check if it's bouncy enough. All you young singers out there, I mean, you guys that are under 60, go ahead, just go for it. Jump,
go for it
as far as you can.
Yeah, be a showman. Come on, give us something.
Yeah, come on. They're not going to come just to watch you play the piano.
So I remember when you got me live the first time was "Grand Illusion." I mean, not an easy song to sing.
No,
and you nailed it. And you made it your own without changing anything. I don't know how to explain what I'm saying. It was totally authentic, totally sticks, and it just incredible.
Well, thank you. That's a great song, and it's a fine line to try to figure out. Okay, I want to honor the original. I don't sound like Dennis DeYoung, but I know what the bravado is that's in that song. You know, personality wise, and I know the take that it is, and I'm able to, as I say, I can completely personalize it, because if ever the Grand Illusion existed, it's today with this device we happen to be on right now, or
right,
you don't know what to take as how big a grain of salt you have to take to discern between reality and what's real and what's not. Obviously right now my face is completely filtered. My face is actually on the floor. Actually, I got some good lighting today. This hotel room, we lucked out. So, folks, this is what good lighting does. Imagine bad lighting. So, Grand Illusion. I really enjoy doing this song. As I say, there's a great bravado to it, especially with the intro to it. Sets up an almost carnival-like atmosphere, marching, you know, kind of atmosphere, you know, that I'm really drawn to. And so it's well teed up. I remember the first show I ever did that, the first time I played with the band in 1999, that was the first song I had to sing. And taking a sip, right? Clink. So that was the first break. The first song I had to sing in front of the audience. And I remember thinking, wow, the faithful here in the house have only ever heard one singer sing this song, and he sings it extremely well. And I thought, well, we'll know it probably in about the next 3 minutes whether this is going to work or not. And fortunately, by the end of it, you know, the song won out. You know, it's a great song, and the audience, you know, were all with their arms in the air and big smiles on their faces. And I remember JY coming over with kind of a grin going, you know, because he said he was extremely confident that this would work out with us together. And Grand Illusion was kind of the litmus test, I suppose you'd call it, for that moment.
Let me ask you this. Everyone in the band is a showman. Like, at any time, I can focus on any individual member.
Exactly.
Todd on drums is amazing to watch. Yeah. JY and Tommy's interaction, so much fun. So you're, you know, 22 years ago, you come in, the keyboard spins, you're taking Polaroids, you're doing all your stuff. Yeah. Do you have to, how does this work? In rehearsal, do you say, hey, these are some things I'm going to do. Is that okay with you guys? Or do you just spring it on them?
Great question. First of all, you've asked the question there that's to me at the heart of why this band has had such longevity. And in my, you know, my inclusion in the band, why it's worked out so well. As I look across the stage from my vantage point, I'm as entertained by the band as anybody in the audience, because as you mentioned, everyone's a front man. There are songs, most of Too Much Time in My Hands, most of it, except for the choruses, I just look at Todd because he's so entertaining to watch. Yeah. He's just such a phenomenal musician. And that's saying a lot because he's just a drummer. Anyway, my son will love that. He's a phenomenal musician, and I watch what he does with the songs and how he can make them so entertaining and so musically. He doesn't make them intricate. He makes them just musically nuanced every night. So there's that. Then there's the, as you mentioned, the interplay between JY and Tommy is that is one for the rock record books, because they are such opposite individuals. And yet it just goes to show how, you know, two human beings of completely different mindsets can comprise a phenomenal thing can happen when they're working together. So you can take that in many ways. But same with Ricky Phillips and now with Will. And when Chuck comes out, his personality just beams, and you have authenticity that's hooked right back to the very origins of the band. Yep. That stretches even beyond the 50 years, because, you know, from my Styx history class, I understand it all started in the Panazzo basement. So, and then on top of that, really, whatever I wind up doing on the spinning keyboard is really spur of the moment. You know, there are some things that work night after night. You know, when the audience start to sing the chorus of Come Sail Away, I like getting up on top there. When we're doing Blue Collar Man and I got to skip a verse, I like sending that thing for a spin while I do a few spins myself. It's just part of the atmosphere that we're that's created during a Styx show. And it's we know it's infectious because we see the audience begin to more and more drop their, which you want to drop all apprehension being overly self-aware and just letting themselves go into the experience.
Yeah. One night I was at a show at the Wiltern Styx show.
Yeah.
And you started to break into some ragtime piano.
Oh yeah.
And you just, and the band kind of looked back and you were like, who doesn't like ragtime? My friend and I, we were just cracking up because we were just like, this guy gets it. This guy's
fun. That's funny because I remember, you know, they're in a band of guitar players. They're all real piano fans. It's amazing to me that they're all very, you know, Tommy Shaw wrote Renegade on piano. You know, he can play the piano. somewhat, not to the level he could play the guitar, but the and JY took piano lessons, was his first instrument. Ricky Phillips plays piano. Todd's brother is a great keyboard player. So it's amazing how, you know, back then, yeah, the breaking into the ragtime thing would kind of put a smile on their faces. And then that's morphed into, you know, I get a portion of the show every night where I'm alone on stage on piano.
Yeah.
And I can play some little piece. And for the longest time, I asked you to hold my calls. Oh, no one's there. I have no sound. I will just let that ring on. Do you want me to go get it?
Go, whatever you need to do. I'm fine.
I'm sure it's housekeeping. They've given up. Excellent. All right. So, now what I've been doing recently, I mentioned Lost at Sea. That's a duo piece with Chuck. But prior to that, I usually play Key Dive, which is a piece from The Mission from 2017. And that's that's kind of my you know, piano show turn moment in the show, and you know, they give me the stage to myself for that period of time.
Now, I'm glad you brought up The Mission, because I have in my notes that The Mission is a concept album.
Very much so.
And I was kind of shocked when Styx released a concept album.
Yeah.
Because the band famously wasn't really a fan of the concept album Kilroy Was Here.
Right. So, I can give you some clarity on that, again, from my Styx history class.
Okay.
And the fact that I've been in the band for well over a couple of decades now, and I'm speaking on behalf of the guys who were there for that Kilroy Was Here tour.
Yeah.
They've never once had anything disparaging to say about the music or even about the concept.
All right. Good to know.
Quite frankly, it was that tour that kind of broke up the band, and the decision, some decisions were made along the way. Obviously I wasn't there, so I'm paraphrasing that kind of spoiled the spirit of what the band was trying to accomplish, and feeling that it was incumbent upon them to go through with that concept, and how they presented it on stage night after night became quite arduous, you know. Yeah. And the end result was they split, you know. So yeah. So that's always going to leave a bit of a bad taste in your mouth until, you know, you get someone new in there, like myself, that keeps going, we better start playing Mr. Roboto. It's a unique piece in the history of rock, and it's a Styx piece of music, and let's play it. You know, much for the same, the song has had great longevity. So that's why I felt, and not only that, but I can really relate to the character in the song, having a secret that he wants to reveal.
Yes,
I like that point of view in a piece of music, so as I say, yeah, the idea of doing a concept record was not as foreign as people think. Often,
all right,
when people are writing reviews, they'll just add their own little bit in there, and that becomes kind of the accepted norm or the accepted truth. And as I say, that's never been the way it's been presented. Yes, they didn't like doing that whole concept tour, okay? But they weren't necessarily against the concept of what it is, which I think is a great concept.
Right.
So when it came to doing The Mission, yeah. The other thing is, being a classic rock band of the progressive era, it's the progressive side of Styx that I'm most attracted to. You have license to do concept records. That was an art form that was developed by those bands of that era. Yes, and Genesis, and Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and Styx, and Jethro Tull. They all had records that had some conceptual backing to them. There's Todd there. And he wants me to give him a call, which I will. That was likely him on the phone.
Okay, we'll wrap it up soon.
People who are keeping score. And so... So a concept record, I embraced the idea immediately when.
Okay, cool. And I asked that question because I didn't know. And it's good when people hear it from someone who's in the band and in the know. So thank you for answering that. As far as the mission goes, I love the song, The Greater Good, written by you and Tommy with your co-lead vocals. You guys just sound so good together.
Thank you. That's great to hear.
You could lay down in this hole you dug, just fade away into the red sand. But we all know it's not who you are. You've come too far to be stranded on this star. But we're not here to take a prize. You know, just open up your eyes. The things that got us here have little weight. Perhaps a chance to be a man. You dream to be, you know you can. Come on, suit up and we won't let you fail.
That song actually began to emerge around 2013. I remember Tommy played me what wound up being the verse of the song. You could lay down. And then I took that home, or took it to my hotel room, but ultimately came home with that chorus. I don't know if you can hear that or not, but
yeah, I can hear it.
Good. And then when the mission came up, it was there as one of the little ideas that needed to be fleshed out, and the story kind of was weaved into the idea of someone trying to go out on their own and realizing they really need they need the support team emotionally and physically behind them in order to accomplish what they're trying to do. So I thought that was beautifully thematic and within that theme, but also so much of the mission, so much of the narrative of the story you can take it on the surface level, which is it's a mission to Mars and then beyond, or it's, often sounds to me like the interaction between a team, and it could be a hockey team or a basketball team or whatever, or it could be a band. I also see that because the dynamic that goes through your mind when you're within a band's the personalities, the dynamic of it, and trying to keep the level of the band above any human foibles, let's call them those, is kind of in the story of the mission, to my ear anyway. And that's part of why I think the concept works on several levels.
I want to go way back to 1982, the album Gowan.
Yeah.
Preparation for talking to you today, I was listening to the Gowan albums. There's a song on there called Keep Up the Fight.
That's right.
That song actually reminded me of a Styx song. It just, there were elements in there.
I'm sure it does, because I'm though my records that came out in the 1980s were very, I had to be kind of, progressive rock had gone into a kind of a weird place in the 80s, and you couldn't kind of get a long piece of music really on television, and you had to get on television, and the songs I got did, you know, were TV staples, I guess you'd say, in Canada. And Keep Up the Fight, kind of, it's funny because that first album was not, it's the only album I ever did that wasn't a commercial success. It actually didn't do too well at all. But the mantra of Keep Up the Fight kind of became a motto that I kept using. And now, you know, three years later, when my second album sold really well, it was triple platinum, people went back and bought that first record and realized, right, and Keep Up the Fight became a staple in my live shows, and it still is in the Gowan shows that we do. Yeah, and yes, Styx elements, Genesis elements, you know, little bits and pieces are definitely in there, and that's probably why I was able to attract some of the great progressive rock artists that I grew up loving to be on my solo records, you know, John Anderson and Alex Lifeson and Robert Fripp, and most of all, Jerry Marotta and Tony Levin. You know, they all played on my solo records. And yep. So elements were in there.
So 1985, I have to mention this, Strange Animal, produced by David Tickle, features the rhythm section you just mentioned, and you win 2 Juno Awards, Best Video for Criminal Mind, and Best Album Graphics for the album itself. And then in 2018, Criminal Mind was finally certified platinum.
Yes.
In Canada. Yeah. All those years later.
My criminal mind is all I've ever had. Ask one who's known me if I'm really so bad. I am.
A platinum single. That's, you see, because it became a gold single within 3 weeks of it being released. Quite honestly, this is a whole part of the story, and I don't think I'd be in Styx if it hadn't gone this way. That record took off, A Criminal Mind took off so quickly in Canada, and it got to number one, and it was like every radio station was the most requested song of the day. Within 3 weeks, it was a gold single. So that's in Canada. In America, that would be 500,000. In Canada, it's 1/10 the population, so it was 50,000 records, which in Canada is a lot within 3 weeks.
Sure.
And it was almost considered imminent that the connection of that record in the United States would be just as successful. And then the music industry stepped in, and my records never got released in the US. So that's a whole other story. That's
a whole other chapter.
But yes, when I joined Styx, one of the first things that Tommy Shaw said was, can we make A Criminal Mind a Styx song? So we still play it. We just played it in Toronto just a couple of weeks ago.
It's on this album.
Well, that's right. It is on that one. Yeah. Too. That's the first time we did it. Yeah.
I stand accused before you. I have no tears to cry, and you will never break me till the day I die. I am.
All right, one more thing, and then I'll let you go. I want you to rest your voice for tonight's show and all that good stuff. The first studio album with Styx that you were on is from 2003. It was Cyclorama.
Right.
All tracks, I think, were credited to the band as songwriters. That's right. Yeah, that's and right. The first time we heard your voice on a studio Styx album was Fields of the Brave.
Sometimes I close my eyes and picture the plains. I see Buffalo Bill and the Iroquois riding again. Open skies, fertile ground. This was heaven on earth that they found. They got of the brave, the fields of the brave.
Yeah. That's an excellent tune.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. I'm really happy with that song. I actually had it prior to joining Styx. And then when I joined the band, they kind of upped it and made it, they got Styxified. So it got improved in all kinds of ways. But thank you. Yeah, Field to the Brave was a good tune. We did that one live on that tour in 2003.
Yep.
Yeah, we did Field to the Brave. And the following year, we did More Love for the Money, which was another one I had on that record.
The cats were on the table. They were waiting for their dinner till the children came and shooed them all away. Daddy's at the racetrack, desperate just to pick one winner. Will he ever be the hero of the day? Mom paid the price, she sacrificed for nothing of value. And why is it I buy the shit that nobody wants to? More love for the money, that's all I'm after.
But One With Everything became the song that had the most legs to it, you know, and I love that version of Styx, because that's a truly progressive type of piece
for
of music.
Sure. So
we're off to a good start with that.
When you joined Styx, did you think it was going to be a temporary position? Like, hey, we need someone for the tour. We'd love if you could join us. Was it in your mind a temporary thing?
Well, okay. So like anything in show business, you better get it in your mind that it's a temporary thing. So I had no long-term plans as far as doing it, but I had a feeling when we met in person over the phone, it was like, yeah, I'll come and do these. They had 33 shows, I think it was, for their summer tour. Yes, if it works out, I'll come and do those shows. I had to move a pile of my own tour shows away. And so I left that to the agent people. But when we met, that very first meeting was at Tommy Shaw's house. It was here, back then he lived in Los Angeles, and it was the closest house to the Hollywood sign. Literally, you'd look out the window and it was like right, you didn't even have to look up, it was right in front of
it. Right there.
And it was kind of a Hollywood scripted thing, because when I went in, met Tommy, J.Y., Todd, and our manager, Charlie Brusco. And there was just this kind of sense of simpatico. We kind of were similar people. We were immediately kind of laughing at the same things, which is a big test, you know, when you find certain things humorous enough. There was a kind of a nervous energy in the room. But once I started playing with him, once we heard our voices together, I thought, this might go beyond this summer tour. You never know. But yeah. First of all, I'm not even in the band yet. So let's see how that
right. Plays.
But by the next morning, they said, yeah, we want you to be the guy. And our third show in, we had, once we started the tour that year, by the way, funny enough, we started on 7-8-99. Yes, it was the July the 8th. Let me think about that for a second. Yeah, July 8th, 1999. And when you put those numbers on your phone, 7-8-99, our agent said, wow, 7-8-99, I have to keep putting that in there. That spells sticks. Weird.
That is so weird.
Yeah, it is odd. But once we did, I'd done our third show. I remember coming backstage and I'd just jumped off the piano for the first time, and our manager came back to kind of scold me about that in a funny way. And he said, yeah, I saw what you did out there. Don't kill yourself doing this, because we'd like you to stay.
Yeah, we have 100 dates booked, so please.
Yeah, we'd like you to stay, you know, and this is looking really good. So tell me what it's going to take to make you stay. And I said, well, just don't hassle me about jumping off the piano.
All right. Here's what I want to tell my listeners about Styx. Many of the bands that I loved when I was in high school, my favorite bands, they all have new members in those bands.
Okay.
Very few are able to keep everyone in a band.
Yeah.
When I go see a lot of those bands, I see everyone on stage and it looks like work. But with Styx and with REO Speedwagon, it looks like fun. It looks like brothers. It looks like this is the band. And that's what I love. So I can just tell you guys, you can't fake it. I can tell you guys like each other, and I can tell you're having fun. So if you've never seen Styx, go see Styx.
That's great, Pat, because that is authentic. That we truly love what we do. We want to do it as long as we possibly can. And what happens at a Styx show is really, it is, you know, I hesitate to use this word, but there is a magical thing that happens with people. I never have the slightest hesitation with saying to people, if you come to this show, you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
I've never seen a bad Styx show.
It hasn't been one.
No, not since you've been there.
Well, I mean, maybe even prior, but we really have never had, even when there have been technical things go wrong, etc. Right. There always seems to be a spirit there that sees it through. Yeah. Remember one night, you're in California, in Carmel. We played about six songs in, and the power went out in the entire city. We were in a venue that was kind of, it looked like an old church that had been converted into a theater, large church. I mean, it had a couple thousand seats, but we acoustically finished out that show and the audience loved it. And we loved it. It was like, I don't know of any other band that would have grabbed that and seen that as an opportunity to kind of invent something in the moment, other than these guys that I happen to be with. So I'm very thankful for the universe putting that in my wheelhouse.
Well, Lawrence, thank you so much for giving me this time today. I know you have a show tonight. Yeah. I only have one more question for you. I end every episode with a playout song. Okay. And you get to choose it. It can be any song from Styx or your solo career, anyone. What would you choose?
Well, let's go with Renegade, because that's the way we always end the show. And that's always, I, around the world, by the time we get to Renegade, wherever we have played, it's amazing how different audiences are at the beginning of a show and how alike they are at the end of the show. It's something to observe from the stage that's really unique. And you see the power that music has. And Renegade happens to be the song that we do at that point. And I just love the song. I love that it was in the last season of Ozark there. It really got a great spin there. And so let's play Renegade.
All right. Thank you so much. You can find Styx information at styxworld.com. On Twitter, you can go to @StyxTheBand. And please enjoy Renegade. Thank you, Lawrence.
You got it. Nice to talk to you, Pat. All the best.
Take care.
Cheers. You too.
Bye.
Bye now.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Lawman has put an end to my running and I'm so can hear you crying, you're so scared and all alone. Hangman is coming down from the gallows and I don't have very long.
Like a pro, you've done it before.
That was luck.